Welcome back, Hawkeye fans, for another installment of the Hawkeye Nation Mailbag Podcast. I am your host, Hawkeye Nation publisher Rob Howe, and we are recording a little bit after 1 p.m. Central Time on May the 27th. Almost made it through another month here. I can't believe it's almost June. And I've got a birthday coming up too, which is kind of good and bad, I guess. It's always fun to celebrate with my family, but it's also another year older. So I will be 53 if anybody cares or was wondering, and I don't feel a day over 52. So there's that. Let's see here. Where to start? This podcast, if you're a first-time listener, is dedicated to the Hawkeye Nation user questions. We take questions via the Hawkeye Nation message boards, our Twitter accounts, and also our Facebook account. So I usually hop around. I don't remember where I started last week, but this week I'm going to start with Facebook. Why? I have no idea. And I'm going to get out of AOL so I don't have to. Yeah, I still use an AOL account. It's one of my sub accounts where I tracked all my junk mail to. But anyway, let's get into questions. You guys don't want to hear me babble anymore. Facebook, Mason Dolan asks, what can you tell us about the Ball State commit, quarterback commit who plans to visit Iowa? I see he's a two-star with mostly MAC-type offers. I'm sure Iowa wants to land a quarterback in the class. On paper, is this the best quarterback option for us? I'll take the last part of your question first, Mason. I do not know. This is the guy that Iowa has decided is the best for them, and they've had a pretty good run here of quarterbacks. And this often comes down a great deal to what Ken O'Keefe sees, and obviously things have changed here this spring, especially this month, when coaches are usually able to go out on the road and watch these players, quarterbacks in particular, throw the football. But Ken O'Keefe has liked what he's seen here on film. Not sure if he has scouted him in person during the fall. But anyway, they've identified him as the guy. Having missed on several other guys that they had offered earlier in this process. And I've said this before on this podcast, with a projected sophomore starter and then a redshirt freshman behind him, and then a true freshman in Deuce Hogan behind Alex Padilla, you have three guys that are, you know, underclassmen at the quarterback position right now. And I don't care what anybody says, it affects quarterback recruiting when their depth chart looks like it does. So it's going to be hard for Iowa in the 2021 class to maybe land a highly regarded kid, not because they're necessarily afraid of competition, but they're going to go to a place where there's a more open depth chart. I've never been one to say, kids are running away. You go where you think you have the best chance to play as early as you can. And Spencer Petras is, you know, through three springs at Iowa. Padilla's through two springs at Iowa. Granted, there wasn't any spring practice this fall. But Deuce Hogan is got, you know, comes in with a lot of hype around him as a guy who people think can really be good at this level. So, and the quarterback that you're talking about is Joey Labus from, I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right. He's been too busy for me to get a hold of him to do an interview. We've been messaging back and forth, and he let me know that he is visiting Iowa this weekend. Now, the dead period for in-face recruiting between college coaches and prospects runs through the end of June, so he can't have any in-face contact with anybody with the Iowa program while he's here. But he told me he's trying to do what he can to get a feel for what Iowa City's like. He's never been here before, so he wants to hang out in the town for a little bit, walk around campus. Obviously, it's not going to be the feel he would get during normal times in the fall when school is in. and there's students all over downtown and the campus, but he wants to do what he can do right now to try to learn more about Iowa. And Iowa is still able to conduct virtual meetings with him, probably do a virtual visit with him, things like that. All that stuff can happen. And I like the kid. I like his film a lot. I'm not a two-star. I mean, Stanzi was a two-star. C.J. Beathard was a three-star whose only other offer was from Ole Miss, which eventually got pulled when there was a coaching change. So Iowa was really his only option. Nate Stanley didn't have a lot of – I mean, he basically had Wisconsin and Iowa, Pittsburgh when Paul Christ, sorry about that, brain freeze there. When he was at Pitt, he offered Nate, and then when he went to Wisconsin, he offered Nate. But Nate Stanley didn't have a lot. I think he was a three-star. And there's not a huge difference a lot of times between, you know, a low three-star and a high two-star. My guess is that Labus would move up to a three-star if he gets, you know, if he ends up at a Power 5 school, and this is going to create more of an evaluation of him now. That maybe some of the websites may not have done. But I'm not afraid of this kid at all. Mac produces a really good level of quarterback and has throughout the years. You can make an argument that, you know, overall, and I haven't done a study of that, it's not as far behind, if behind at all, the Big Ten in terms of producing NFL quarterbacks. So it's kind of some feedback I can give you on that one, Mason. And we'll learn more going forward here. I hope to interview Joey next week when he gets back from Iowa City, just to get a kind of idea of what he thought and kind of where things stand with Iowa. So look forward, look out on Hawkeye Nation for some more information on Joey Labus. Justin W.C. Borman asks, what are the chances that the tight end Moore from Johnston and Tyler Morrow from Assumption end up with getting scholarships from Iowa, I assume? And are there any other high school players that could get a scholarship by the end of the season? I don't know a ton about Moore. He's obviously committed to Iowa State, and I'm not sure Iowa goes there, obviously, and I'll talk about him later because I know I have some questions on him. Thomas Fedone out of Council Bluffs Lewis Central is top of the tight end chart, but Iowa took two tight ends in this last class and two in the previous class. I think they'll go high if they can get a high-end tight end. They'll take him here, but I don't think they're going to force the issue. In addition to Tyler Morrow, who we'll just kind of see, I saw a story, I think it was in the Quad City Times from Matt Koss published today. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but would encourage you to check it out on the Quad City Times website, that Tyler Morrow is not rushing his decision. I think he wants to take visits, and I think he will, he's going to, at least from Matt Koss's article, he's not going to make a decision until after the football season. Let's all hope that there is one. I think there's still time for Iowa there. And I think he still wants to leave that door open for Iowa, but there becomes a point where, you know, if he's not feeling like it's going to happen with Iowa, that he has to take a offer, from another school that he likes. And he has plenty of really good offers, from other schools. So I certainly would not be surprised, to see it go either way. You were asking me other guys in state. Yeah, I think you mentioned Marcus Morgan and Ashton Cook. Marcus Morgan is a quarterback at Iowa City West. Ashton Cook is Marv Cook's son. Marv coaches Regina, played at Iowa, Patriots. You guys know all the stories there, but he's been banged up. He's had injuries both in football and basketball, and really it's hurt his evaluation. I got to see him last year, and I think he's got a chance to be pretty good. But basketball might be his best sport. Marcus Morgan, baseball might be his best sport. I think both of those guys have an opportunity at offers. Whether or not they're going to get him or what the percentages are, I don't know. Another guy to keep an eye on is Seth Malcolm. He's a linebacker from Fremont Mills, Iowa. Has not committed anywhere yet, but he's on the radar. And a guy, let me see what his offer list looks like. He has offers from Boise State, Iowa State, Kansas State, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Wyoming. So Seth Malcolm, a linebacker out of Fremont Mills, is a guy to keep an eye on. I think Iowa wants to evaluate him more. So he's a guy that that is certainly on the radar. Thank you for the question, Justin. Kenneth Anderson asks, any comments you have about Coach Ferentz being committed to a single quarterback through thick and thin? Thinking about Alabama switching quarterbacks in the championship game a few years ago and Ferentz sticking with an injured Beathard in bowl game after the 2016 season, I could never see Coach Ferentz switching starters if he had a bad half. Also, Iowa State, for example, took a chance playing a freshman quarterback in Purdy to great success. Does the complexity of Iowa's offense make it difficult to give a good young quarterback a chance to be successful? What if Hogan, for example, is lights out and a quarterback prodigy? Could you see Ferentz starting him several games in the season if needed? I'm always of the belief, and I know people are going to roll their eyes listening at this, but I am of the belief that the Iowa coaches, for all intents and purposes, play the players they feel give them the best chance to win. So big picture of your question, Kenneth, I do think if for instance, Petras was struggling and Hogan looked just had a grasp on the playbook and just was, like you said, a prodigy and just was playing better. And it was, you know, discernible. You could see the difference and Hogan should play. I don't think the coaches would hesitate to do that if it gave the team the best chance to win. And, you know, they made a quarterback change in 2008 going from Christensen to Stanzi. They made a quarterback change after 14, basically, pulling a two-year starter in Jake Rudock and installing C.J. Beathard. They were going to have a quarterback competition in the spring. Who knows how that would have played out. The bowl game thing was weird. The Beathard should not have been in there, and I'll go to my grave saying that. He wanted to be out there, but he had no business being on the field. He was a sitting duck, and I thought that was a poor decision to leave him out on the field. And I would tell Kirk that too, and I'm sure he'd tell me that, just to go back to writing stories and not being a football coach. But, I mean, we have opinions. We have sports opinions. From what I see, he shouldn't have been out there. But just from the, kind of the overarching answer to your question, Kenneth, is I think they do play the best player. I do think it is hard to learn Iowa's playbook. And we've talked about this on this podcast before, talked about this with Drew Tate on our Hawkeye History podcast earlier this spring. It's a big playbook. The coaches ask a lot of the quarterback, a lot of pre-snap things, pre-snap decisions are made. It's a lot more. There's a lot more on their plate than a lot of quarterbacks, including the quarterbacks at Iowa State. So hopefully I answered your question, Kenneth, and I appreciate you asking it. Tim Herzog asks, who is the best tight end of the Ferentz era? I say Dallas Clark, but there are a lot of great choices. Yeah, I mean, that's really, really tough. I mean, you think about guys that probably don't even – you wouldn't even say okay because of recency bias. You're looking at Noah Fant and T.J. Hockenson, great tight ends. George Kittle, who's had more success in the NFL than he did at Iowa. But those guys certainly are in the conversation. But you look at a guy like Scott Chandler, who was really good here and then went on to a long NFL career. Brandon Myers, same thing. Tony Moiaki may have been the most talented and gifted guy, but ends up being injured a lot and just never was able to stay healthy for a long period of time. Great potential there. C.J. Fedorowicz, was doing pretty well in the NFL before the concussions took him out, and he was a good player here. So, I mean, I'm probably missing guys too that during this era. For me, it's Dallas, and some of that is a bias of my love for that 2002 team and how clutch he was and how important he was to what I think is Kirk Ferentz's best team. All-American Mackey winner. And when you look at it, the two Mackey winners are Dallas Clark and TJ Hockenson. I would probably put those two guys at the top of the list if we're just talking about college. Those, you know, what they did at Iowa, those would be my top two guys. And I would lean towards Dallas. Noah Fant would not be far behind that. And then you couldn't go wrong with a lot of those guys that I mentioned, as guys that would be, they would be number one at a lot of schools. So, that's, and I don't know if this question was sparked by, Rick Brown's article on Hawkeye Nation today, Tim, but I would encourage people, to read Rick's article on just on the legacy of the tight end position during the Kirk Ferentz era. And obviously it goes back. We talked about Marv Cook a few minutes ago. It goes back well beyond that during the Coach Fry era as well. Tight end is synonymous with the Iowa program. And it's been fun to watch all of these guys. And I think we've got some good ones coming through. I think Sam LaPorta's got a chance to be really good. Josiah Myerman's in the program, I think. I think Sean Byers poised for a strong fifth-year senior year. You've got the freshman Luke Lachey coming in, Elijah Yelverton coming in, the two highly regarded freshmen that are coming into the program. So position is still stocked. So be interesting to see how those guys do this year and moving forward. Production dropped off a little bit last year, but I would expect that to rebound in pretty short order. So that does it for Facebook, and I appreciate the questions again from Mason, Justin, Kenneth, and Tim. And we are out on Facebook. Let's go to Twitter. And I'm going there because I think I have more questions on the Hawkeye Nation message boards. So I will save that for last. And let me go here with find my hashtag. Please, guys. Hashtag HN Mail. That's the way I go. I know I missed somebody's question last week who did hashtag HN Mailbag. And that's an honest mistake. And I apologize for missing that question, but it just makes it easier for me during these podcasts when I'm bouncing around on my computer to different areas where there are, you know, different questions to be able to find things a little bit easier. I also did want to mention before I signed off, actually I'll catch up with that before we sign off, just kind of programming notes and things like that are going on at the website. But from 3 hours ago, Travis Barnhart 6 asks, as goofy as it sounds, Nate Stanley's ability to pooch punt helped us in some odd situations. Does Spencer Petras have the ability to punt if we lined him up on fourth and short and he doesn't see something he likes? Thanks. Love the pod. Thanks, Travis. And I appreciate you listening and I appreciate your question. It's a good question. I don't know is the simple answer. I've not asked Spencer or the coaches about his ability to punt. Nate punted in high school. And I don't think that Spencer punted in high school, and I could be off on that. And if I am, feel free to roll your eyes right now and call me an idiot. But it's something I think the Iowa coaches, if the quarterback has the ability and to maybe do that, they will. And I'm trying to think of other quarterbacks have done that through the years at Iowa. You guys probably remember better than I do. As I said at the top of the pod, I'm turning 53, and memory is not one of my strengths these days. But I think they'd probably be open to Spencer being able to do that if he's capable of doing it. It's a nice tool to have in your belt, so to speak. And you're right. It did work for Nate Stanley pretty well and obviously helped the team out. So if Spencer's capable of doing that, by all means, allow him to do that. And punting situation is going to be interesting here because Torrey Taylor, the punter from Australia, does not know when he's going to be able to get here, be able to fly from Australia to get to Iowa City, as we've written about on the site. Players can get back for voluntary camp on June 8th, and it'll be interesting to see when Taylor can get here. He's an incoming freshman from Australia. And I'm sure Iowa wants to see what he can do and have him here in the punting competition. Because with Michael Sleep Dalton leaving, there's obviously a huge opening there. You have Nick Phelps, a walk-on, who from Northwest Iowa, who originally went to North Dakota State as a walk-on and then transferred here. And then Ryan Gersonde, who's on scholarship and has battled injuries throughout his career. They're both going to be available to punt, but Taylor was thought to be one that would be in the competition from the get-go, so something to monitor there. Thank you for the question, Travis. I appreciate it. Again, I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Iowa Fan Williams at Iowa Fan Williams, Joe Williams on Twitter asks, who gains the most playing time from DJ Johnson leaving? Jamari Harris, Terry Roberts, McKinney, or someone else? That's a good question, Joe. At least going into the summer, I think it's pretty clear that Julius Brents, Riley Moss, and Matt Hankins, not in that order, in no particular order, are your three top corners. So those are the guys you're gonna see the most at that position. Terry Roberts was kind of mixed in more and more as the season went on last year in sub packages, nickel, dime, things like that. So I would think that he would benefit most, to answer your question most directly. I think Terry Roberts has a chance to earn the reps that DJ Johnson, and he may have beaten DJ Johnson out even if DJ stayed, who knows. But I think he probably stands to benefit the most, but I think Iowa will take a closer look at guys like Jamari Harris and Daron McKinney, guys who redshirted last year. I know Coach Parker really was complimentary of Harris. They traveled them to Iowa State. I think he was warming up with the twos in the pregame. So he was kind of right there. But as we all know, these guys develop at different rates, and it's hard to know how a guy's going to progress from last fall to now. Again, not to become a broken record, but with no spring practice, it's hard to know how much they were able to improve on their own. So I'm sure that's something the coaches will all be very interested to see. But all three guys you mentioned, I would assume, will be in the mix for that two deep. And it'll be interesting to see maybe if they start to use Moss and Julius Brents in those nickel dime packages. Who plays the cash? We still don't know there, too. So one of those guys could figure into the cash position if Dane Belton ends up going back and taking the strong safety spot, which was vacated by the exit of Geno Stone. So a lot, not a lot, but there are aspects of that secondary that need to be worked out here this summer. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. Thank you for the question, Joe. Chad Lystico, my friend from the Des Moines Register, longtime friend. I know I've talked about this on the podcast. Chad and I used to carpool to high school games back in the late 90s, early 2000s, when he was working at the Cedar Rapids Gazette and I was at the Press Citizen. And I remember some cold drives and some weather and all that other stuff. But no Chad for a long 20 years, over 20 years. So appreciate his question. And his question is, if there is, and I appreciate him listening to the podcast as well. I listen to his, and you guys should too. It's the Hawk Central podcast with KXNO, with my friend Ross Peterson, friend Mark Emmert, and Chad do a great job. They have interviews a lot of times with assistant coaches. Listen to Derek Foster last week, gives you great insight into the Iowa program. So highly recommend that podcast. And Chad asked, if there is college football this fall, how much media, if any, do you think will be allowed to travel to the road games? That's a really good question, Chad. And I try not to cheat too much on these questions and do too much prep work. Although you advised otherwise, you know me, I'm more of a fly by the seat of my pants guy rather than actually prepare for things. I do questions that I need to research. I do look up numbers and data and things like that, but more when it's an opinion or just kind of a, you know, speculation or something like that, like this question, I'm more apt to fly by the seat of my pants. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you have too. I've talked to people at Iowa and what, you know, some models that they're looking at for the media. I think it's, again, it's May 27th. I think this stuff, you know, these decisions will happen over time here. I think these athletic departments are looking at all different ways to, for allowing people into the stadium. from fans to, you know, people that help, you know, whatever, you know, security and people that help on the sidelines and all that, you know, who we use the word essential. And this certainly isn't essential from an aspect of what we've gone through during this pandemic and essential workers, but who is essential to be in there? My guess is if they had to pick and choose, it's going to maybe be seniority. At least I'm hoping from my perspective, because I'm one of the outcasts that runs a website. And then also you're looking probably at more traditional, quote unquote, traditional media, newspapers. I just wonder, there's so many questions I've thought about, and I'm sure you have too, Chad, from a media standpoint. You know, what type of access do TV stations have? Who among us is allowed on the sideline? How many photographers? How close are we to the benches? You know, pregame, we're normally out shooting, you know, on the field, photos of the swarm coming out. And, you know, there's so much to be determined here. It's a great question. And I think, you know, just not to cop out, but I think it's something we learn over time. But I know, you know, travel's probably going to be a little tricky too, especially with Penn State and Ohio State this year. You know, flights, rent-a-cars, things like that. What's, you know, all that stuff is going to be, you know, and then I think, you know, we'd be naive to think, not consider, you know, the finances of the entities that we work for. Can they afford to send us? Can they afford not to send us? So many questions. It's a great question to ponder. And I think it just kind of ties in with, you know, fans wanting to know if they're going to be allowed in and how many are going to be allowed in. These are tough decisions, man. I'm glad I don't have to make them. But I'll be interested to see how that thing shakes out. And hopefully I get to see you soon, Chad. I hope you're doing well. Chad has, his mother-in-law living with them. She's in the high risk category. And, so he's being real, real cautious, during, the pandemic, as we all should be. And, you know, heart goes out to him. Hopefully everybody's safe where he is in his home, and hopefully everybody stays safe, but we'll talk to you soon, Chad. Thanks for the question. Hawk Takes at Hawk Takes Pod. Hawk Takes must have a pod. I'll have to check that out after this. With the returning talent of wide receiver, do you expect to see Tyler Goodson line up out wide much this season? Much? Probably not. I just don't think you need him to do that. I could see maybe bumping him into the slot at times and putting him in motion and doing some different things that way, just to kind of keep the defense on its heels a little bit. But I don't think you need to line him up wide. But there certainly can be some formations, I think, where you can give opposing defenses, shouldn't have eaten lunch before this podcast. We can give opposing defenses different looks, things to think about, pre-snap stuff. So I think Tyler Goodson's going to get the bulk of the running back carries, with Mekhi Sargent also working his way into that mix. And then after that, we'll see what happens. But looking forward to seeing year two of Tyler Goodson, no question. See this. His guy's name is so long. Brett Duhame, I believe it's pronounced. Brett Duhame, Culture Eats Strategy for Breakfast. As looking at all the coaches across the University of Iowa athletic program, there's tremendous stability in the coaching ranks. What is the secret sauce? Well, Brent, I would say it's probably the fair media coverage and the media members that the coaches get to interact with here. You know, it's at another level without question. And I'm sure they all appreciate that. Tongue in cheek. If obviously you can't see me, but the tongue was firmly planted in cheek there. There are a number of factors here, not the least of which is Iowa is good to its coaches, financially, support from a support aspect. You know, you even look at assistants don't usually haven't left here very often. So, you know, that's a big part of it. And, so, you know, I think Gary Barta is somebody they enjoy working for. This is a great place to live and raise a family. Many of these coaches have children that are in the school system here, which is great. Just a lot of factors that go into it. And it's really happiness, right? Whatever those factors are that I named, they all kind of come together, and it's a matter of being happy. And obviously, if you're happy, you stay. If not, you start looking elsewhere. So I think all of those things probably feed into the reasons why there's a lot of stability in the Hawkeye Athletic Department. And I think that's all on Twitter. Let me see here. I had another question, I think, by somebody who didn't use the hashtag, but the question was good enough that I will. Travis, at Travis 462-76243. Now, I happen to see this, even though he didn't use the HN male hashtag, I happen to see this when he asked the question, and I thought enough of it to go back. How ironic would it be if John Miller exited Hawkeye Nation the year before Iowa basketball became national champions? That would be very ironic. And if John had any desire to come back and help coverage of said national championship, he would be welcome with open arms. And there wouldn't be anybody out there happier in the fan base than John Miller if Hawkeye basketball was able to do that. So thanks for the question, Travis. Use the HN male hashtag. Scolding. Somebody said I scolded Lucy Rodin on the Twitter yesterday, but that's another story for another day. That's where that term was in my head. I have no love for Barstool Sports, but that's another pod for another day. Let's see here. Let's go to the message boards. That does it for Twitter. I think we're moving relatively crisply today through our podcast, which is good. Let me start with basketball, since that's more off season, if I could say. They're both off season, but football season will be upon us, hopefully sooner than later. So let's go to the basketball board and basketball questions. T-Mess 1989 asks, are players able to work out together or practice as a team right now? As far as I know, there are guys working out together, T-Mess, and it's kind of a social distancing thing and trying to follow all the guidelines. I don't believe that they're still not allowed to work out as, you know, 5-on-5, do that type of stuff on campus. But they certainly could get together on their own and play. We're in a state in Iowa where things are open again, where the state's basically open again. So nothing is restricting them from doing that. And if they take proper precautions, which I know they've been schooled in, they can work out together. And I believe some of them are, and that's as far as I'm going with that. Has there been any news regarding McCaffrey redshirt waiver? This is Patrick McCaffrey, and I have not heard any update on that, T-Mess. I would imagine something would be coming along relatively soon. The NCAA is probably pretty busy right now trying to figure out how to get live sports back. So I'm not sure where they are in terms of waivers. We've already seen Bohannon and Nungy. And Patrick's got time. I mean, it's not something he's going to play next year anyway, and the waiver wouldn't be used until down the line. So probably they may prioritize these things. I'm kind of speculating here, but that's kind of what my thought is on that. So we will let you know when we know, and hopefully it's soon. Who do you expect to improve the most from last year to this year? I am going to go this. I may have had this question in another form before. I think Joe Toussaint has the most room to grow. So I would say improve the most from last year to this year. I'm going to say Joe Toussaint. If we're looking at a guy that's going to maybe take his game to the next level, you know, up a notch to where he's considered, you know, a main target of other teams' scouting reports, I'm going to say C.J. Frederick. I think if he hadn't gotten hurt and kind of had a roller coaster type season last year in terms of health, I think we would have seen greater strides. If he's healthy, I think I underestimated this kid. I didn't think he'd be that good, this good so soon, I should say. But I think he has a chance to be really, really good, and he plays with the edge that you like. So that's kind of I gave you two answers there. But if you're looking for most improved, biggest, you know, in terms of, you know, size, volume, I would probably say Joe Toussaint. And then what are your expectations for the three players returning from injury? PMAC, Nunji, and Jabo. Expectations for all three. I think all of them will be key components to this team. This is Luka Garza's team. I don't think anybody would argue that. We saw last year he earned that last season. If he's back, which I think he will be, he's who you go through. He is the number one option, and the nobody should have a problem with that. I think Joe Wieskamp is probably option number two. I know people got on him. He did not finish last season the way he wanted to. I'm upset for him. I think he may have had a chance of all the guys on Iowa's team when the refereeing became a little bit more tight and some of the clutching and grabbing wasn't allowed, and maybe in the Big Ten tournament, but for sure in the NCAA tournament, I think that would have benefited Joe the most. And I think he spent this offseason learning how to combat some of the tactics that were used against him last year, which, again, is creative clutching and grabbing that's not called in the Big Ten to slow his freedom of movement. But not making excuses for Joe, because Joe has to find a way to figure those things out and be better. So kind of got off on a tangent there. But anyway, my point was Garza and Wieskamp are your top two options. After that, you know, I think Frederick is a possibility. I think Jordan Bohannon is a possibility. You know, Connor McCaffrey's going to have his role within the offense and distributing and you know, keeping the offense moving. I think Nunji can be a guy that can really benefit from Luka Garza. He's now he's played a year out to, this will be his fourth year on campus already. And so he's getting bigger, he's getting stronger, and he's versatile enough where I really think he can benefit from Garza. And I'm not sure just from a numbers standpoint, what these guys are going to do, if that's what you're asking. I just think they'll all be key contributors. And Patrick McCaffrey is, for those that haven't seen him play a lot, he's an explosive type athlete who's getting stronger and can score in a variety of ways. He's long and defending. I think he'll have a role and be able to play a role this year. I don't expect him to be, you know, a major contributor, but I certainly see him having a role. Hawkeye's gone wild. The years you've been covering Hawkeye, if you could pick any player during that time and make your favorite starting five. Oh, all right. So this is one that I should have researched. This is a question I must have read over Hawkeye's Gone Wild, and I apologize for that. So this is coming off the top of my head without a whole lot of thought. I think you start with Garza at center. I think that's a no-brainer. I started covering Iowa basketball during Tom Davis's last two seasons. So if I'm going with a starting five, man, this is hard. All right, and I'm going to probably show some biases here, but I'm going to go with, man, Garza's like my only no-brainer at center right now. Got good power forwards, Broner and Aaron White. Reggie Evans. I'm going to put Reggie at power forward because I think with Luka, he would be a great complement. So I'll go with Garza and Reggie. Small forward. Man, I guess I could try to put Aaron White there. Jared Uthoff there. Wieskamp. Haluska, I guess, would maybe be more of a two guard. So let me go point guard. I'm sorry that I'm taking up and just kind of going through my head here and working this out in real time. I apologize. I'm just going to go quick here. And I can change. I'll change my mind and give you another starting five next week. But I will go at point guard. I will go with Jeff Horner. At the two guard, I will go with Alaska's hard to leave off. I'm going to go with Devin Marble. So give me Horner, Devin Marble, Jared Uthoff, Reggie Evans, and Luka Garza. Sorry, I need more time to think about this. And you gave me more time because you asked this question yesterday at this time. So that's my fault. My bad for not thinking more about that. And I'm sure people are yelling at their their devices right now of somebody that I left off. But those are the guys off the top of my head. Spider Rico asked multiple questions. Knowing J-Bo like you do, were you surprised by J-Bo considering transferring according to Lystico's piece? Yeah, Chad did catch up with J-Bo. I recommend, encourage people to read that on the Register. I know because when Jeff Goodman and John Rothstein put out there that it was a possibility, I know those guys don't just throw things out there that they've never heard. That obviously came from someone close to Jordan, if not Jordan himself. So, and I mentioned this before, I talked to Bobby Hansen years ago, and he thought about transferring after his freshman or during his freshman season. I think I've talked to Greg Bruner, and same thing with him. It's not easy. It's just not easy to and now the landscape is, cleared up so much for people to move and try to go for the, to a better situation. But it surprised me a little. It would have surprised me more if he actually did it. I think Jordan, with the Chris Street story and, last year at Iowa State with the shoes, it would be weird if he would have left. And I get that, he wanted to go somewhere and win. And I'm glad he didn't have to go somewhere else to win. And, but it doesn't surprise me whenever guys think about or consider transferring. It's part of the landscape. It's part of college football and basketball right now. So hearing that somebody is thinking about that does not surprise me. Number two, is the fact that Luka is back in Iowa City a pretty telltale sign that he's coming back? I think it helps. Certainly helps, Spider. And we talked about this previously. The June 3rd deadline for withdrawing your name from the draft and coming back to college has been pushed back. There is no date right now, so he does not have to make a decision next week like he was scheduled to have to do. So nothing, but he's back here and he's working out and, he's picking up, playing pickup with guys and he has to be given a concrete spot on a roster is what he said to make him leave here. And I just, with all that's gone on and this evaluation process being slowed by the quarantine, I'm just not sure that he'll get that. Things change, but it's a fluid situation, but I would say, I don't know, put a percentage on it, but I feel pretty confident that he will be coming back. Number three, do you think Fran reverts to a 10 or 11 man rotation next year? Or do you think he's learned that an 8-9 man rotation is better for consistency and cohesion? Maybe 10 or 11 man rotation early and then shrink it to 8 or 9 start of conference. Yeah. And he's done that in past, kind of worked out rotations and combinations that he feel feels works the best together. He's got a lot of options this year and a lot of versatility. And yeah, I think we're going to see a deeper rotation. I think they probably go at least 10 deep, and maybe 11, because I do think some of the true freshmen are going to play, because you need to at least get them some time, because you're losing so many guys. I don't say so many, but you're getting guys that are going into be upperclassmen now, and you're going to lose experience the next 2 years. You have to start to prepare some of the younger guys for playing. B. Gold, B.J. Armstrong said that the one coaching opportunity he could never turn down is to coach Iowa. Do you see that as a possibility down the road? I do not. I think B.J. is pretty happy with what he's got going on in his life, which I believe is he's a sports agent now. Correct me if I'm wrong there, but I think that's what he's doing these days. And BJ's 52. He's not a spring chicken anymore, and he doesn't really have coaching experience. And we've seen other guys jump in, former players that have jumped in and, you know, became coaches. But a lot of those guys kind of worked their way. Even Patrick Ewing was an assistant. I'm not sure about Chris Mullen. And Penny Hardaway, I think, ran an AAU program. But those are just some guys off the top of my head that come to mind when I think about former, you know, players that have gone to the bench in college. I'm trying to think here. I'm looking up on Wikipedia what BJ's doing these days. I'm sure you guys who watched The Last Dance know what he's doing, but he EVP and Manning. He's an agent, right? Yes, he's an agent. So I think he's doing pretty well financially there. I think he's pretty happy with what he's doing. So I would not anticipate BJ coming back and coaching Iowa basketball. But I am interested to see if guys like Matt Gatens, Jeff Horner, and Dean Oliver, guys that are in college coaching, will eventually come back and be on the Iowa bench at some point. And that is it for the basketball board. We're left with football, and I think none too soon, because we're deep into this podcast. Holmes asks, how much longer will Kirk coach? Second question, is there a succession plan for when Kirk retires? Last question, when he does retire, will they keep in-house or go outside to hire a coach? Many have opined that it will be Bryant, but that's at best an educated guess to us outsiders. If I had to, and Holmes then offers his own insight, which I appreciate. If I had to guess, I'd say the COVID-19, before COVID-19, it was 2 years. After COVID-19, which gave Kirk a window into what retirement looks like, it could have scared the crap out of him, so it will be 5 years. As I mentioned on the site, and I think we've talked about on the podcast, Kirk will be 65 on August 1st. So just keep that in mind when we're talking about that. He's in very good shape for 65. So it's not somebody I think that will retire for health reasons. I think it'll just be he wants to enjoy the latter years of his life with Mary and his grandkids, and knows it's time to. So to answer your first question, how much longer do I think he coaches? I don't think he knows. I honestly don't think he knows. And I've talked to him about this, and other people have asked him, you know, when it's going to be. I think he just takes it year to year. I don't think he says, okay, I'm going to coach 2 more years and leave, or I'm going to coach 3 or 4 more years and that'll be it. I think he'll know when it's time, and he'll keep going until that time comes. Is there a succession plan in place? A formal succession plan? Absolutely not. But the goal here is for Brian to succeed his father. And I don't know if you could get either one of those guys to admit that. Maybe it's even in their subconscious. That's what I think people would like to see happen. I think Brian taking over for his father is what people would like to see happen. What makes that happen? I don't know. I think they have to continue to have sex. Sorry about that. Success. I don't think you can fall back to what we saw here, you know, 2012 to 14. I think you need to keep this train rolling success-wise. Brian has to succeed with his offense. And who knows? Maybe it's Phil Parker. Maybe Phil Parker gets it until he retires, and then it's Brian. And I'm just spitballing there. But I do think it will be somebody that is connected to the program. I think Kirk will have a lot of say in who his successor is, just like Hayden Fry did. So thanks for the question, Holmes. Spider Rico asks, sort of piggybacking off Holmes's question above, does Gary and AF retire together? Do Gary Barter and Kirk? I don't think that's the decision that's been made. I know Gary Dolphin and Eddie Podolak are going to retire at the same time from the Iowa football broadcast, but I who knows? Gary's quite a bit younger than Kirk, I think. He's probably seven years younger than Kirk, so not sure they'll go out at the same time. In fact, I would be surprised if they even talked about that. Will they? Yeah, it could happen. Number two, if they do retire together, who do you think would be in line for the next AD? Does the UI go the diversity route and promote Barbara Burke? Do they pull Gene Taylor from Kansas State, someone else? Yeah, Iowa has a knack for, but, you know, Gary Barta was not somebody within, the Hawkeye family. But I think Barbara Burke would be a solid choice, and I think she's probably building her resume to put her hat in the ring. Gene Taylor would be, was very well-liked here and did an outstanding job in his role, and I think made a real good hire at Kansas State, and I think is building his resume there. So I think those are two really good candidates, but I will be perfectly honest with you. I don't know a lot. I don't pay a lot of attention to administrators. That's probably my bad and something that I should do a better job of. So I'm not really sure who else may be out there as a candidate. I don't think any of us probably heard of Gary Barta before he was hired. So we'll kind of have to see it. And I know people sometimes hate when I use the word fluid, but it is. I mean, there could be a guy now who's a guy or a gal right now, male, female, who's building his or her resume right now, but that by the time Gary Barta decides to retire, ends up being a candidate that may not be a candidate now. So kind of see. Well, time will tell. I don't think Gary's close to retirement right now, and I could be off on that, but we'll kind of have to see how it goes. And number three from Spider, do you think Wisconsin running backs could have as much success if they played at Iowa as they do at Wisconsin? In other words, is our running game issues a lack of consistent overall talent at running back, or is it the scheme? I think it's a combination, and I don't say that as a knock on the running backs that have come through here, but we've talked about it before. I believe, had two running backs in the Kirk Ferentz era that have been drafted. Liddell Betts, who he inherited from Hayden Fry, and Sean Green, who was drafted in 2008, long, long time ago. So I think part of it is that. And now, granted, running backs aren't a hot commodity in the NFL right now. They're kind of even seen as sometimes as a disposable position, and one with great turnover. So teams are not investing a whole lot of draft equity in running backs. So that could be part of it too. But there really haven't been any running backs from Iowa even sticking in the league. So I think that's part of it. And then we've talked about it before on this podcast, Spider. They do need to find different ways to get their running backs freed up. Inside zone, outside zone, they've had good offensive lines here, and defenses are still finding a way to beat it. And we see too many times where the running back does not have a chance, and that can't happen. Something has to change there. More hat on hat, more misdirection plays, some running with the receivers. And I mentioned earlier, Derek Foster was on the Hawk Central podcast last week with with Chad Ross and Mark, and he mentioned that the Iowa running backs, when you take away wide receivers, Nate Stanley's sack losses, which counts against rushing yards, averaged 4.9 yards per carry last year. That's not too bad. You'll take that. They just have to find ways to not have negative plays. They have to be more consistent, not have negative plays, plays that go for a yard. You're going to have them. You just can't have too many of them. So I think it's a combination of both, Spider. Hawkeyes Gone Wild asked, "Well, with Jack Teflon on board, do you feel better about the defensive line?" Oh, I'm sorry. He corrected himself on the following post. Jack Heflin is who he's referring to, the graduate transfer from Northern Illinois, who announced last week that he's a defensive tackle who announced that he is joining the Iowa program. And yeah, I feel a lot better about the defensive line, having an experienced defensive tackle in there. The question marks really are on the defensive, with defensive end. I think, with the rotation of Heflin, Davion Nixon, Austin Schulte at tackle, I think you're really solid there. Noah Shannon, probably the next guy there. I think you're a solid four there. You talk about a guy like Logan Lee, Logan Jones, who's coming in as a true freshman this year. There's depth there at defensive tackle. I think Iowa is okay, and Heflin really, really solidifies that for me. Defensive end, I think, is still the question mark, though. Golston is, a two-year, or not a two-year starter, but really a two-year contributor, and a one-year starter. I think you kind of know what you get with him, and you hope that as a fifth-year senior, he takes the next step as a player and is even more productive, and I would not put that past him. Chauncey is a really, really, really hard worker and has worked to get to the point he's at, and he can see, you know, that carrot dangling of the NFL. He wants to be as good as he can be as well. But what happens at that other spot and what happens behind him in terms of getting a rotation, that's one of the biggest question marks, I think, that faces the Iowa defensive staff and maybe the whole team this summer, getting prepared for a season. So we'll have to see. John Wagoner, Joe Evans, who else am I missing out there? There are other guys that played last year that are behind those two guys or with that group. Van Valkenburg, the transfer from Hillsdale College. And then there's the new guys that are coming in. So I'm not going to go through all the names at defensive end. We can talk about that in a later podcast. But that's really the question for Mark for me is, and I don't know, can you kick Davion Nixon out to defensive end? Maybe that's a possibility. He's a pretty good athlete, but he's 315 pounds and he's about 6'2". So we'd have to see how quick he could be off the edge. He certainly could be a power guy. Moto Basan asks, now that all the athletes will be allowed to return to workouts, have you had a feel when recruits were able to visit? I do not know. As I said, and we've talked about on this pod, it goes through June. I think a decision will probably be made somewhere early June, middle June. If they extend that dead period through July, the focus right now is really on getting the football season started. So coaches are going to be focused on that. I'm not sure how much they want to integrate recruiting into that. My guess would be August, but that is a pure guess and speculation. I think they'll want to see what happens for a month or two on campuses in terms of if there's spread of the virus, how safe is it before they start allowing high school kids on campus, because free agents, for lack of a better term, teenagers, minors that you're bringing on campus. If you were to get them sick, and maybe there's a waiver system for them to sign to take visits. I don't know. Just a lot of unanswered questions. But no, Moto Basan, I do not have an idea or a feel for when that would happen. I'm completely speculating. But I think those are some of the factors that will be looked at. Safety, basically. Is it safe? How safe is it? What are we liable for? Those are some of the questions you have to ask yourself. Motibasan again asks, it feels like this is the most players that have entered the transfer portal so far. Will this push our recruiting player class to limit, 25 player limit? I don't know if it'll go that high. I was of the belief that it's going to be in the low 20s. It'll probably stay there. Iowa has a tendency to award walk-ons with scholarships. We saw that at the end of last season with Kerner and Keith Duncan and Kyler Schott all got were told they were going to get scholarships after the Nebraska game. So there'll be some flexibility there for walk-ons. So again, I know you guys hate this, but it is kind of fluid. Iowa, is pretty much up against the scholarship limit now or close to it. I kind of lost track with all the movement recently, but we'll kind of have to see how things play out in the fall before we can really get a feel of how big this class will end up. B Gold, I think you've asked this question before, B Gold, and I think you want an update. And I probably was off on the last time you asked this, so take this with a grain of salt. Of these five recruits, how would you rank them in terms of most likely to commit to Iowa to least likely? And the five names that he offers us are Thomas Fedone, tight end out of Council Bluffs Lewis Central, Ricky Parks, running back from Tampa, Joe Alt, John Alt's son from Minnesota, Skylar Bell, a receiver from Connecticut, and Michael Mislinski, a center from Tampa. From the Florida area, or maybe it's Jacksonville. I'm off on that. But anyway, how would I rank those? I think Skylar Bell I would put as the most likely. Got a chance to do a story on him yesterday. Encourage you guys to read that. He kind of shares his thoughts on Iowa and pushing back his commitment date. It was probably a good decision on his part. He just wasn't there yet in terms of being ready to make a decision. So decided to push that back, but he would definitely be number one for me, clearly, by far, if I could say that. After that, I would probably say Joe Alt, just because he's a legacy, and he's visited, and he likes the staff, and there's a connection between his dad and Kirk Ferentz. But if you hadn't heard, Notre Dame offered Joe this week, and that certainly could change the picture here. It certainly does change the picture. I'm going to try to interview Joe here some point today or tomorrow and have an update on him and his relationship with Iowa and how things are going with Iowa. So stay tuned for that, and I have some other recruiting updates coming as well. So yeah, Bell 1, Alt 2. I'm going to go Fedone 3. Although I don't feel great about him. Then I will say Mislinski 4 and Parks 5. Parks has had some cryptic tweets the last few days that I don't know if they say something or anything or nothing or what, but they're a little bit cryptic if you want to check those out. But he has visited here. Everybody on this list has visited with the exception of Mislinski. And I think that has to happen first. I don't know what percentage I would put on any of these guys. I think Iowa is in really well positioned with Bell. I think it's well positioned with Alt. I think it's got a puncher's chance with the other three guys, and Fedone being closer to Iowa City and having visited here multiple times. I think, and having friends that are already committed in his class to Iowa, I think gives Iowa a chance. It's an instinctual thing. I just don't feel good about him ending up at Iowa. I hope I am dead wrong, but that's just kind of a feel that I have, and plenty of times doesn't mean a damn thing, but just kind of, you guys ask my opinion or my feelings on things, and that's where the Parks tweets have got me a little bit on tilt. And then Mislinski's got a visit, and he's got a lot of really good offers and some that are real close to home. So that's always a challenge to pull prospects far from home when they have high-level programs after them close to home. So That is the last question. We did it again. I think we're right around an hour. So these are hitting about an hour, give or take a few minutes every week. And that's because of you guys asking great questions. And I appreciate your participation. And hopefully we can continue to do this. As long as you have questions, I will try to have answers. I apologize. We did not have our flagship podcast this week with myself and Andrew Downs of KXNO. We had Monday holiday. That's normally when we record, and Andrew's week got kind of jammed up with it being condensed into 4 days. So could not find a time to record this week. We will be back next Monday with plenty of to talk about in terms of the athletes coming back to campus. We have a Gary Barta Zoom meeting tomorrow, Thursday, May 28th. So we should get some answers about athletes and sports coming back. From Gary. So we'll have that to talk about. Did not have a Hawkeye history podcast this week. Trying to catch my breath a little bit here. It's been normally I'm able to kind of catch my breath a little bit in May, after spring ball in April, after going, from July through, the end of April, nonstop, covering sports and recruiting, Iowa Hawkeye sports and recruiting. So I try to catch my breath a little bit, recharge my batteries, and going to start doing that probably the next couple weeks. So not sure I will have as many of the Hawkeye history podcasts. Running out of prospect podcasts too. I think I will have one with Logan Jones later this week. So look forward to that if we can hook up a time together. And those guys are going to be back at, or making it to campus here in the next few weeks, probably. So the 2020 class will have to put a cap on the prospect podcast. We got through most of the class, and some guys tapped out, didn't want to do it, aren't real comfortable talking publicly. And I certainly understand that and appreciate them, their honesty with that. And really appreciated the guys who did feel comfortable doing it. So little bit of update there. We've got on the site, we have a couple stories from Rick Brown. He talked about the tight end legacy, the last 5 years of Iowa football, how things have gone well, kind of recovered from the end of 2014 when things went bad, capped with the Tax Slayer Bowl. And so Rick's got some stories this week as well. I've got some recruiting updates. We've got columns and opinions. Check out the message boards if you want to fight with people and argue about things other than the virus, which those that are listening to this podcast that are on the message boards know that I've become tweaked by that this week. I want to get back to talking about Hawkeye sports. I can talk about the virus with friends and family and other platforms. I don't want to do it on the Hawkeye Nation message boards. I want that to be a sanctuary for talking Hawkeye sports. And that's my reasoning behind that. But we will wrap up this edition of the Hawkeye Nation Mailbag Podcast. Again, I appreciate all of your questions this week, as I do every week. And we will be back and talk to you next week. It'll be June. Actually, is next week June 3rd? That's my birthday. Maybe I'll do a podcast on my birthday. We'll have a birthday podcast, but maybe not. But we'll do one at some point next week. So thank you for listening. Thank you for visiting the site. Thank you for reading. Thank you for supporting HawkeyeNation.com. This is Rob Howe, Hawkeye Nation publisher, and we will talk to you soon.